Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So how about setting an alarm clock for bedtime rather than time to wake up? That's one of the experiments that we will hear about now as part of our Clock Your Sleep project. Maybe you remember that earlier in this series, Russell Sanna, sleep expert at the Harvard Medical School, told us that getting Americans decent amounts of sleep would require a very specific change agent, American corporations.
We're losing the boundaries between work and home, between light and dark, between sleep and wake. Sleep health is a business issue because of the cognitive performance aspects. So to counter that, we are looking around for where are the best change agents. And if you look at American corporations to begin with, they have three bottom lines that coincide with our interests around sleep health: productivity, healthcare costs, and safety.
Russell Sanna from Harvard. So we have some voluntary change agents with us now, four top executives who have taken up the challenge to experiment with ways to enable and even encourage their employees to get more sleep, never mind that they themselves might like this too. With us are Arianna Huffington, who of course leads the Huffington Post. She has a new book about this too. Marianne Gilmartin, CEO at Forest City Ratner. And two from the home team, our own Laura Walker, president and CEO of New York Public Radio, and Herb Scannell, president of BBC Worldwide America. Herb is also past president of the New York Public Radio Board of Trustees. Good morning, all. Well rested, I hope.
Yes, definitely.
And Arianna, since you're chiming in there, I see that your latest book, Thrive, details your own crisis from a few years ago, born of sleep deprivation. So can you give us the short version of what happened to you and how it changed your thinking about sleep?
Well, the short version is that I actually collapsed from sleep deprivation and burnout and broke my cheekbone on the way down and got four stitches on top of my right eye. And that was what started me on this journey, A, of getting more sleep myself, B, of becoming a sleep evangelist for others, including my colleagues at the Huffington Post, and C, finding out about all the latest science around sleep that makes it very clear that it's truly a wonder drug in terms of our health, our mental clarity, and our creativity.
And Herb Scannell from BBC Worldwide America, my sources tell me that you have sleep problems. Do you want to describe them at all or relate them to your professional lifestyle?
Yeah, I have sleep apnea, so I sleep with a sleeping mask, and I think I had 51 incidents of apnea in an hour during a test.
Wow.
So sleep's important, and I've got to get better at it, and that's my background.
So true confessions from Herb and Arianna to set the stage. Now, all four of you as top managers engaged in a sleep experiment that included teams of employees. So, Laura Walker, I know that, I'll tell everybody, I was not in this WNYC experiment. So tell me and everyone what you and some of our colleagues did.
Sure. Well, we started this because we were doing all of this reporting about sleep. And Dr. Russell Sanna and Dr. Chuck Seisler of Harvard were telling us, you know, it really matters a lot what happens in the workplace. So we did three things. We had about 20 people from across the organization. We did three things. We took an afternoon relaxation break, a nap, breathing exercises, meditation, or an afternoon walk. Second, avoid work email from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And then thirdly, to avoid scheduling meetings between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. And the goal was to do this at least 50% of the time.
Tell me that meeting scheduling again.
Avoid scheduling meetings before 10 a.m.
Right.
Or after 5 p.m.
And I also gather that you experimented with maybe writing emails at night if you felt you had to write an email, but not sending them until the morning?
That's right, yes. And I think, you know, so we were trying to kind of avoid, you know, being on your work email and having all that stress, you know, in the evening. And I found it hard, personally, as I was doing this, and several other people said they found it hard because you were in meetings all day, and then this was a way to kind of get your work done.
And CEOs have a lot of power in this respect. If you write an email at 10 p.m., people will feel more obligated to reply and keep working than if someone who works below them does.
That's right. That's right. And so what I found was that if I didn't send the emails, that would reduce everyone else's stress. So what I was learning and other people learning is that you compose it, save it, and then send it in the morning.
And Marianne Gilmartin, CEO at Forest City Ratner, you did something similar there?
We did. We had an agreement. Again, an organization that I like to say functions through dysfunction and chaos. This was a big move for us to make a decision where we would agree to a sample set of about 22 folks from both support and professional roles in the organization. We would agree to a nap time and or yoga after lunch, at least three times a week, if not five times a week, and email embargo after 9 p.m. and before 7 a.m. And as a serial offender myself, realizing, as Laura said, that a lot of this does begin at the top, and if the CEO stops sending emails, and I like to say I do my best work after 11 p.m., it really does change people's sense of obligation and duty to be on email late into the evening and early in the morning.
Well, is it too restrictive? I mean, what about people who really do their best work after 11 p.m.? I have a little bit of a night owl in me where sometimes the creative juices just start flowing late. And, you know, I'm not sure I want to tell myself not to do that.
And as the reigning champion of late night email, I couldn't agree more. And I think what I what I've decided after this study to do is create a draft and actually try not to send emails to my team after 11, and then just fire them off at 6:01 the following morning.
So there's what you do to get your own decent night's sleep, and then there's what you don't impose on others.
Correct. Correct.
Go ahead, Herb.
That for us, it was easier to be predictably off, which was, you know, to for all the executives to not email after, say, 9:30, than it was to be predictably off in the morning because, you know, we're a company where the home office is in England. And when we're off in the morning, they're on. So there's, you know, some amount of morning time in New York that is, you know, prime time for them.
Right. And Marianne, weren't you doing this while you were trying to close a deal in China, where in theory they work while you sleep?
Exactly. So we had this mega transaction for the two-week period, and it was particularly difficult for the executives who were driving that deal. I was proud that we were able to get through the 2 weeks, and for the most part, only minor infractions from the plan.
So what do you do when somebody's working on a China deal? Just give them a lot of daytime hours off?
Well, what you can do actually is, you know, it's either 8 in the morning or 8 at night because everything's 12 hours different.
Yeah.
So I think the Chinese were helpful in allowing us to shift the way in which we communicated during that two-week period.
And Ariana, I see that you tried one of the Harvard Business School corporate sleep policy ideas that seems to be a popular talking point at least, which is setting an alarm clock for bedtime rather than wake-up time. Tell us about it.
Well, I actually started doing that 7 years ago after my burnout, and it helped me go from 4 to 5 hours sleep a night to 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. And about 90% of the time, I get them. And I'm much more productive the rest of the time. There is no trade-off between productivity and getting enough sleep. I must say also, it was absolutely wonderful listening to all the things that Laura, Herb, and Marianne have been doing. And I can't tell you how important this is, because when I started talking about this thing 7 years ago, there was a lot of eye-rolling. And now this is seen truly as a performance enhancement tool. And when we actually took the challenge up at the Huffington Post, I participated together with 10 editors at the Huffington Post, and I collected their experiences. And I must say, the hardest of the three challenges was not responding to work email from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., even though we have an official policy at the Huffington Post of nobody being expected to be on email after hours. But we are also programmed to never disconnect from our devices, that even with this being an official policy, it was still the hardest challenge for all our participants. Walking together instead of having sit-down meetings was the easiest challenge. People loved it, especially now when the weather is better. And a lot of them found the meetings more intimate, more connected than if they were done at the office.
Harder to take notes, though, no?
But easier to remember.
Well, how does the alarm clock thing work? Walk us through that process.
Well, basically, you literally set your alarm. And incidentally, I don't use my iPhone as an alarm because if you use it to wake you up, then you're going to have it charging by your bed. And all the science tells us that if you wake up in the middle of the night for whatever reason, you're going to be tempted to look at your iPhone. And then all your daytime data will invade your nightlife recharging time. And you will not sleep as deeply when you do go back to sleep. So I have an old-fashioned Pottery Barn vintage-looking alarm clock, which I would set.
With an analog AM/FM radio?
Exactly. listening to you.
Of course.
Actually looks great on my nightstand, and I've given to all my friends for Christmas presents. And basically, I would set it up the time I wanted to go to sleep, which was always 8 hours before I had to wake up, which varies for me. It's not the same every day. But I organize my nightlife and my sleep life accordingly.
Does it have a snooze alarm, like you can keep sending emails for another 7 minutes?
No, because that's another thing that's very important, and the science really proves that. In fact, I have 55 pages of scientific end notes for that reason in the book, that you need at least like 15 minutes of transition time. With no screens.
Yes,
I give myself half an hour.
To really go to sleep.
Before you can go to sleep and let your mind kind of disengage from your day life.
So can I ask all four of you, how did you measure success? Did your employees or team members actually get more sleep at the end of this experiment? Herb, how about you and your team at BBC?
Yeah, I think it was hard to measure because it's a short period of time, 3 weeks, and it was a small sample group of senior executives. I think a couple of things. You know, I think people came out of it wanting to roll out the predictably off policy of, you know, no email or texting after, say, 9:30 as something that we roll out to the whole company. The one other thing we did was napping, which I was surprised because I didn't think we would be able to do it. We have an open office space. We have a couple of rooms, but not a lot of rooms. So I don't know if we could scale it. But I must say, people were really excited about the idea of napping, and it was almost like a kid being offered ice cream. You know, you had the chance to go and have a nap, except sometimes the ice cream wasn't as good as you imagined it to be, so people didn't always sleep.
Can people do that? I don't think I could do that here in the middle of the day. Like, people at the BBC America could go from, you know, producing a special on the Israeli-Palestinian crisis to sleeping 10 minutes later?
Well, we're not doing that. The specials like that. That's the news group. We're more the entertainment side. But you know what it was. You had a half hour in the day, and I fell asleep 2 out of 3 times. Other people didn't. So I think less than half of the people actually fell asleep in the allotted time. But they liked the idea, and I think it made you feel good.
And Marianne Gilmartin, CEO of Forest City Ratner, your group of 20 plus. How did you measure success?
I think that. Each of the participants felt regeneration from the afternoon rest and the yoga, loved the yoga, company sponsored, and I think we're going to go ahead and continue that yoga 3 times a week. People just found it very difficult to get there, but once they got there, felt that it was really uplifting and exuberant. And then liberation from the email, just a sense of just complete liberation from this sense of needing to check their BlackBerry or their iPhone. So 61% of the participants reported that it was easier to get to sleep and to stay asleep than their past performance. And, of course, it wasn't a long period of time, but I think certainly we got quite positive feedback from the folks that participated.
And Laura?
So we did a survey afterwards and asked people, you know, how successful were they at the 3 challenges that we had put forward, and did it improve their sleep and did it improve their productivity? 20% of the people who, for example, took afternoon relaxation breaks or walks said that it actually did improve their sleep, which I think in 2 weeks was pretty good. And about 60% said of the people that did the 3 things said that it made them feel more productive and better. The afternoon walks were great. And I just have to say, I was so inspired by my fellow CEOs, by Marianne and by Ariana, of course, who kind of started this whole thing and, you know, came and her book is just fabulous. And Herb and the leadership that they took in their own companies. Because I think one of the things that we've learned here is that it really is about leadership at the top and throughout the whole organization. So we're thinking of things we can do going forward.
Ariana, we're going to run out of time in a couple of minutes. I wonder if all of your interests as sleep-deprived humans and productive top managers come into conflict here. There's a common refrain in some workplaces that not getting enough sleep or sending emails at all hours is sort of a badge of honor because it means you've been working so hard. So as the boss, what do you think when you hear that an employee isn't getting enough sleep?
Well, that's precisely the delusional mindset that we are attempting to change. Ultimately, it's a complete delusion that burnout, sleep deprivation, exhaustion lead to better results, a delusion proven as a delusion by the financial collapse, by dysfunction in Washington, by the by what President Clinton actually said, which is that the most important mistakes are made when I was tired. He did not specify what mistakes, but all of us can identify with mistakes we made when we were tired, sleep-deprived, and burnt out. So I just really want to say that I can't tell you how exciting it is to hear from Laura, Herb, Mary Ann about what they are doing and how game-changing this is going to be because already we are seeing a lot of changes. And the fact that people being congratulated for working 24/7 is no longer being used with the same frequency because it's like congratulating people for coming to work drunk is just one example of the changes.
Ariana Huffington, who leads the Huffington Post, and her book Thrive is on this topic. Marianne Gilmartin, CEO of Forest City Ratner. Our own Laura Walker, President and CEO of New York Public Radio. And Herb Scannell, President of BBC Worldwide America. He's also past President of the New York Public Radio Board of Trustees. And you can see all our sleep reporting, the Clock Your Sleep Project, the CEO experiment, and the one that hundreds of you participated in, thousands of you actually, at WNYC.org. And thank you all for coming on and your leadership on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.